can you take us back to Optelic and what you were doing, what you were a part of, and what your role was?
Gosh, yeah, that's a big question. I think with the passage of time, I've had to do a bit of digging actually back into the brain cells and kind of dig back through emails and, you know, notes and things like that. And to be honest, that time ago, there isn't a lot left. But I suppose one of the things that really strikes me with just kind of doing the thinking that I've been doing recently is I'd forgotten that Telic and Herrick were so close together. And I think until I properly thought about it, quite a few of my memories were kind of mingled into one. But I think for Telic particularly, I just come back to the UK. So I've been with BFBS for quite a long time, but the job I was doing previously to coming back to the UK in 2004 actually was very different. So I'd kind of left radio for a while, BFBS radio, and I'd come back to run a couple of business areas for BFBS, one of which was what was then known as CSE, Combined Services Entertainment. So I was very new into that job, and my very first task, having come back and picked up this new responsibility, was to go into Telic in the very early days, just after the ground invasion had finished, to go and do a recce and figure out what it was that we could deliver into that location, because we hadn't really got much recent experience of doing anything that was going to be such a logistical challenge as that was clearly going to be. And so I flew into Basra International Airport, which clearly had been a fully functioning contemporary airport until the ground war. And then it was like something out of a war movie, broken and dusty and, you know, electric didn't work and, you know, all of those kind of things, obviously full of British military and American allies as well. And it was, I was just like, wow, okay, how did I end up here? And that was a real adventure because it was early days, so we were doing...
Had you ever been to a hostile environment before like that?
Certainly nothing like that. I had quite a lot of experience of growing up in the Middle East because my father worked out there, so I spent a lot of time in the Middle East, but I'd certainly never been anywhere like that, and I'd never been in that kind of environment for sure. And I think, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, the smell hits you and the temperature. I think that first trip in that I did just after the ground invasion had finished, which would have been a sort of late 2003, early 2004, the temperatures were extraordinary. You know, and I remember that because I was in and out quite a lot into Telic over the years.
But it hits you, doesn't it, as soon as you get off a plane?
It does hit you, the kind of the hairdryer temperature of the air.
What about the smell?
Yeah, and the smell of the desert. I think the smell of the desert, the dust. And there's a kind of a military smell when you're in a military base that's hard to describe, but there is that smell, right?
Yeah.
Right. And then I think the one thing I do remember is being so hot at times that my body salts were in all my clothes. I've never been that hot before, and I've certainly never been that dehydrated where you can... I never realised you had so much body salt in you. And the first time
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, the first time I went, I learned a hard lesson because I got really dehydrated and quite sick. Because it's not just about water, it's about, you know, replacing the electrolytes and stuff as well. So I never made that mistake again, but it was certainly hard that first time in. So that was really just to kind of get a measure of where were people, what were the resources like, how could we entertain them? Because that was our job really, was to go in short, snappy, raise morale and then get out again, because you also didn't want to be a burden on the people that clearly had to look after you. So we were learning as we went, basically. And because I was new into that responsibility, also learning how to manage the risk, recruit the right talent, prepare them to go, you know, it was...
Well, that can't be an easy sell when you have to say, you know, hey, do you want to, you know, entertain the troops? Everyone's going to jump. And then you tell them, you know, you've got to wear body armour and you'll be sleeping with them, basically, in the tent behind the wire.
Yeah, totally. That was exactly it. And I think, you know, we did take a bit of a risk because we did... I think that's one thing that CSE and now BFBS Live Events, as it's known now, it's one of the things that the legacy has always tried to do is push the boundaries of entertainment and not always do the same stuff all the time. But the logistics were a real challenge in Telic, particularly in the early days. You know, the amount of kit we could carry, the size of the audiences, would we have a stage, wouldn't we have a stage? You know, all of that.
Are they
going to
laugh?
Yeah, and I think... But that's why I think comedy played such an important part, because I think what we learned early doors was getting in and out quickly, first of all. And then you can really raise the temperature in a short space of time by making people laugh. And there is nothing like the sense of humour that runs within the UK Armed Forces. It was ever thus, right? They're just extraordinary. And you can find yourself in the most unlikely places laughing. And that's a real juxtaposition of kind of reality and life within a military community. So we did really push the boundaries. And I think we couldn't always take celebrities who were used to five-star hotels and backstage riders. You absolutely can't do that. You need people who are willing to put themselves out, but that are strong enough for their content to carry the show, whatever kind of environment you find yourself in. And that might be daylight, possibly with half your audience don't have English as their first language because the Gurkhas were spending time out there. So you need visual acts. Comedy in daylight outside is never easy. We did some of that. So my reflections are it was a remarkable time. It was a really tough time for our forces. It was a really hard operation, but it was such a privilege to be able to go and see it firsthand. They welcomed us, you know, with open arms, and they really looked after us. And every time we went, there was another challenge, but there was always another laugh, and just an extraordinary experience to witness firsthand, really.
One of the biggest takeaways I got from reading a few of the articles about this time during Optelec, and like you say, Herrick, obviously, you know, it wasn't as simple as any of your acts going out, performing, and then getting back on the plane. They were there for up to, 5 days, 10 days, whatever the tour was. And the biggest thing was, when we talk about morale, it wasn't just about spending an hour on a stage. It was about the interactions they were getting with civvies. Ultimately,
always, yeah. So whether we were taking comedians, and we also did a bit of, at the time, sort of the nuts girls and sports celebrities, we would try and do some of that as well. So, you know, international footballers who'd retired generally, because if they were still playing, we couldn't get them to go anywhere. But yeah, we were often in theatre for 10 days. We'd try and get around as many locations as we could, you know, and that even meant, you know, in Telic up to Alamara, to the base up there. I think that first show that I first took in, that after the recce that I'd done, it took us probably another 9 months before we actually managed to get a show in. And we did go up to Alamara, and I think the Staffords were there at the time, and they couldn't believe we'd come to see them and that we bought this random comedy show that we'd put together. And I remember one of the young soldiers sort of saying to me, and he was very, very young, "We always think people forget about us, so thank you so much for coming." You know, and we ate with them in the cookhouse, and it was just a real privilege and an honour to be able to do that. It really was.
I imagine, and I think I actually did read this, I imagine, you know, you must have had to, part of your role would have been to get feedback, obviously, from the troops you were putting shows on for. But are there any stories that come to mind in terms of when you were taking people out on the road with you and doing these like 5 to 10 day tours, so they were there for a period of time and getting interactions between civilian and military? Any stories stick out for you about the feedback that your comedians were getting whilst you're giving them a tour?
Loads.
And there was, because we know what they're like.
And there was quite a lot of civvy baiting, which is a sport in the military, right? And I would always really enjoy that, you know, a helicopter lift, you know, with a footballer like Razor Ruddock with his legs dangling out the back of a helicopter, and then, you know, they'd take off at an angle that, you know, would make him feel like he was going to fall out the back and scream like a girl.
That, you've got that memory.
That is one of my absolute memories of that kind of stuff happening. But then also I remember just, you know, I'm sure anyone who was there will know, you know, the hurry up and wait and the delays when you're trying to move around the locations. And a soldier that we met who was an amazing magician, and he sat and entertained us for a good hour while we were all waiting in a departure location somewhere to get on a helicopter or a Hercules or something like that. That was extraordinary. And then the other thing I noticed that happened a lot, particularly with the comedians that we took into theatre, because they were spending time together in a way that they never would in the real world. So they were also sharing tactics with each other. The visual comedians would teach the verbal comedians how they could upskill the movement that they used on the stage. And then those comedians that were prolific writers would be helping the visual comedians with verbal tricks. So it was also a really creative environment in the middle of a conflict zone. It was extraordinary.
How did you filter what they needed Because like, it's not just about making them laugh, and I know it's not that simple, but what else did you have to consider when sitting down to plan an event for them?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because there are the military audiences are a really interesting audience, because particularly in those kind of operational environments, they live together, eat together, sleep together, so they're a pack. And for the talent, a pack audience is very different to a general public audience in a comedy store or in a Roundhouse Music event.
Yeah.
So you really have to think about the kind of acts that you're using and their ability to adapt, because if you upset one of them in the audience, you tend to upset them all.
Yeah, see, I hadn't thought about it like that. When you go to a comedy show, maybe you and a few friends and, you know, the couple next to you gets picked on, you can laugh at them. But I'd never thought about the pack sort of mentality almost. Yeah.
It can definitely work in a comedian or a musician's favour, but equally there is more jeopardy. And it does make the gigs edgy, but I think equally it's, you know, when you think about the environments, where you think about those people are, where you think about what our audiences are doing day in, day out in those kind of operational environments and all the stuff they're having to contend with, you know, difficult conditions, temperatures, you know, the whole rules of engagement piece being really tricky. You know, I think for us, it was always about trying to do the best we could within the confines of the resources that we had and the people that were willing to go. So you have to work really hard with your acts to suss them out. We auditioned quite a few of them here in the BFBS HQ to see how they would go down with an audience. So we were fortunate that we could test people more before we got them into those difficult telic type environments.
Yeah, because I imagine earlier days, obviously, especially when this is like, you know, it's a brand new thing that you're doing and you're out there, there must have been moments where maybe you had to teach your acts something, if you know, if they did something that just didn't sit right, didn't land right. You know, was there ever a moment like that, whether it was just, don't do that one again, that's not funny and here's why, or what, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so that's another great question, because I was early into sort of managing comedians and musicians. I've been very used to managing radio presenters up to that point, but
you're still very good at it, by the way.
But this was a new thing for me, and I learned very quickly, don't tell them what not to do, because that doesn't go down great. But it is about having a dialogue with them, unpicking the show, asking them what they thought about, you know, what didn't work, and then also making suggestions to them based on what you know about the audience, which is certainly in those early days was very fresh to them. They got more experience and they understood more. And then also the order in which you put people on a stage, you know, the take five comedians and deliver a sort of comedy tour type scenario, which is very low resource logistically. You don't have to carry a lot of kit. And one of the things we did have to just deal with was quite often our kit didn't make it to the place that we'd made it to.
Yeah.
So we had to, you know, improvise and, you know, find another way to do it. And you needed resilient enough comedians or whoever your acts were who could deal with that, that weren't going to throw a hissy fit. And, you know, if the radio mic didn't work, then they just had to shout a bit louder, you know, that kind of stuff. And that just became the norm for us. And in a way, that was part of the challenge. And I remember, I can't even remember the location, but it might have been Umkazar or somewhere like that, where I literally took a musician with a guitar who did a strolling, you know,
he walked around
guitar
playing.
Requests. Yeah,
no!
Exactly. It was a very small audience. You know, it was no more than sort of 30 or 40 people. Couldn't really build a stage, so we literally were in a sort of welfare area taking requests, and he was that talented, that particular musician was that talented, that he could pull that off.
And obviously you've worked with a lot of people, a lot of different talent. Do you ever, especially with the anniversary, you know, are people reaching out? Are you still in contact with any of them? Are they...
Yeah, I mean, I think we generally, you do kind of make friendships, and some of those people that I was working with in the early telic days have gone on to be, you know, quite prolific and famous. Rod Gilbert is a good example of that. You know, he was part of those early experimental days when he certainly wasn't doing the television work or the touring work that he's doing. You know, we were sleeping in tents in transit accommodation, and, you know, there was him in his pants in the morning looking like a character out of Notting Hill, you know, like that, those kind of memories. And, you know, we worked with Rod for many years. So, yeah, you still have occasional text messages, and, you know, this is the 15th anniversary, obviously, but there was a 10th and there was a 5th. So you know, the tour managers and all of those people that work with us, we're all still in touch with each other.
I can't imagine. And I'm so sorry, Nikki. I've got so many more questions to ask you, but and this one's probably a little bit personal from me, but I'm curious, when we talk about, and you mentioned it a little bit on reflection already, that you were there with a job to do, boosting everybody else's morale. How did you boost your own? How did you take care of you?
Oh, listen, we all got really close, I think. You know, you can't go into that kind of environment as a jazz hand civvy, which is clearly what we all were, and not bond with the people that you're in theatre with. And as I said before, because the military community just has this amazing sense of humour and really loved the fact that we'd come to see them, there was laughter and joy in every moment, even though some of those moments were really difficult. And we never underestimated the tough times that the UK Armed Forces were going through on that particular operation. That was really clear for us all to see. And I think we say that now, you know, just go and spend some time with the UK Armed Forces. And it just reminds you what it is that BFBS does and why we do it. And it's just a pleasure. It's an honour. And I'll never forget it. And I'm really privileged to have had those experiences in my life.
But what did you do afterwards? You know, when we came out, what happened after?
Well, I think because Herrick went on after Telic had finished. And the other thing that we did really as a result of both Telic and Herrick was figure out the value we could add to decompression, which was happening in Cyprus throughout for the Telic people as well as the Herrick people. And so the value of having a live entertainment proposition in decompression was something that evolved from the experiences that we had in theatre. And so, yeah, that kept us really busy for a long time. And once again, I just take my hat off to the men and women of the UK Armed Forces and the privilege it is to see firsthand, one, what they have to put up with, the kind of conditions they live and work in, and actually the way that they approach their job and the way they do their job.
BFBS, the Forces Station.